Welcome to our fourth class in Surfing Reality, our class on the Spandakarikas. It's, as always, exciting and delightful to be here and to feel your presence in the ether. So let's just take a moment and feel into our presence here. Those of you who are present live on the call, and those of you who are present in the field and will be participating in this virtual Spanda Vortex via the MP3 later on tonight or tomorrow or in a few days. And I just want to say that I have loved the conversations on the listserv this week, all the different kinds of sharing, the correspondence around awareness of awareness and body sensation, and especially, you know, the process of being aware of awareness, just because it's always been one of the most immediate wake-up practices I know. And I'm also very fond of connecting to the body as pure sensation, which for me has always been a major entry point into deep meditation. I have to say, from my own experience over the years of practice, that I first began to tune into the self through meditation, through mantra practice. And shortly after I began, really by listening to a talk of my guru's, the idea of looking for awareness, actually beginning to tune into the awareness, the awareing, that's holding experience into that cognizing capacity, what the Tibetan Dzogchen teachers call empty cognizing. You know, there are different names that we give to that quality in consciousness that knows, that witnesses, that is present to experience. And one of the things that I discovered by practicing what we now call awareness of awareness is that it really is one of the most direct practices there is, if it resonates with you, for opening up to that kind of aha of awake consciousness. In other words, for letting you see, as these verses say, and as Kavita very beautifully shared, that everything in our experience is arising and subsiding in our own consciousness. Or as verse 28 says, everything arises out of the individual soul, that is, out of our awareness. And so he is all things because he perceives his identity with the awareness he has of them. That point that we actually cannot experience anything, without the experience being inside awareness, because it is our capacity for being aware, for knowingness, for consciousness that allows us to have experience. So in recognizing that there is actually nothing that can be experienced unless it is being experienced within awareness, we begin to little by little tune in, first of all, to what we were talking about last week is the incredible intimacy of all of our experience, but also with the identity, albeit in a hidden and often limited feeling form, our identity with the creative awareness that is the source of all this, with Shiva Shakti, with Spanda herself. So in just a moment, we're going to chant our mantras, and then we'll plunge into a discussion of verse 30, which really is the kind of culminating verse of this sequence on the experience of being liberated while alive. And I also just want to mention, as many of you know, that we are on the fifth day of the Navaratri celebration, and that this day is dedicated to the energy of abundance itself, that is, to Lakshmi, to Mahalakshmi, the feminine form who in culture in India and increasingly in culture around the world is identified with what I I'll think of as the golden radiance of abundance, the capacity for really experiencing pure abundance. Lakshmi represents the sweetness of the gifts that start to come to us as we begin, as we are purified by the Shakti. And again, as you know, this, the myth around the Navaratri celebrations, which is from a great poem called The Triumph of the Goddess, the Devi Mahatmyam, is a sequence of three tales in which the goddess, Durga, manifests in a form to destroy powerful demonic forces. And the myth is generally considered to be a metaphor for sadhana itself, for the process of purification and awakening, in which the obstructive qualities that, you know, of ignorance and egoity and pride and greed and cruelty rise up, take over our world, meaning our inner world, and then are dissolved by the goddess, by the Shakti. So the myth celebrates some very bloody battles between the goddess and the demons, and they're bloody because it actually takes, for most of us, some degree of struggle to see into the egoic forces and to allow our intense awareness and practice, which in our individual field is what we offer as, you know, which is our own individual Shakti being offered into the process of sadhana. And the subtext of the Navaratri myth is that Shakti never gives up, that her commitment to liberating us is such that she is willing to undergo endless trouble even when we don't feel like it, even when we don't feel like being rescued, even when we really would prefer that our egoic qualities be left alone to do their thing because it's so uncomfortable having to see them and experience them rising and, you know, kind of being humbled. Nonetheless, the Shakti, the Spanda Shakti, the liberating Spanda, does not ever give up. And Lakshmi, who in the story arises out of the mind of Goddess Durga while she's in the midst of battling two very wealthy and cultured demon kings named Shumba and Nishumba, who are particularly interesting as associates of Lakshmi because they are very definitely masters of the universe. They're the guys who buy the Gulfstreams and the couturier clothes and bid up the prices of Warhols and Picassos. And of course, they also represent the subtle form of arrogance that each of us carries. Whatever it is for you, whether it's pride in your success or the secret feeling that you're smarter than anyone else or your ability to empathize. And of course, as we become practitioners on the spiritual path, our arrogance begins to kind of work its way into our spiritual identity. And so the goddess Kali in the early three nights of this festival pretty much humbles us in whatever way we're able to feel humbled. And that can feel fiery and intense, as several people have shared. And then as the Lakshmi energy begins to arise on the fourth and fifth days, we start to feel the sweetness of practice. And I hope that that's happening for you. One of Lakshmi's subtle lessons is that conquest and worldly success and wealth and even spiritual progress are to be enjoyed as gifts of the divine, but that in order to remain with us, they actually need to be loved and recognized as gifts. So this time is a time of learning to follow what I would call Lakshmi's protocols. Because truly, even though Shakti Spanda is infinitely free, she also manifests in specific ways. And one of Lakshmi's protocols is her subtle request and, in fact, inspiration that we honor her by cultivating qualities in ourselves that match Lakshmi's energy. You know, it's often said that in order to attract certain realities, we actually need to manifest the vibratory reality that matches that. And this is really what the practice of Lakshmi Sadhana shows us, because the Lakshmi Shakti is the most, really I would say, the most luscious, the sweetest, the most sattvic, the most loving, of really of all the popular aspects of Goddess. And her sweetness, her graciousness, is best felt into by following the tantric directive, honor Lakshmi by becoming Lakshmi. Honor Lakshmi by becoming Lakshmi. This is the tantric secret of all deity practice. You honor or you worship or you meditate on divine energies by identifying yourself with them. So one of the ways that the tantrikas do this practice is by imagining our bodies are open to take in the felt sense of Goddess Lakshmi. And we're going to do that as our opening meditation. As soon as we chant the mantras, we'll bring Lakshmi Shakti into the body through the grace of Spanda, and then we'll allow her energy to unfold for us as we cultivate our understanding of these three key verses in the Spandakarikas, verse 28, 29, which we discussed last week, and especially verse 30. So we'll start with the opening verse of the Spandakarikas, the beautiful verse which invokes the powers of the Shaktis by whose expansion and contraction the universe is absorbed and comes into being. And we'll chant this mantra three times, and then we'll chant Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundayi Vichay Swaha, the mantras of Navaratri, five times. So I'm going to chant, and you can chant in your own tune or along with me. And you can begin by taking a posture that feels firm and comfortable. We'll, so to speak, improve our meditative posture as we begin the first meditation. But for now, feel that your sits bones and your hips and buttocks are taking the support of the seat, feeling grounded on the seat. Take a very deep breath in, filling the front sides and backs of the lungs, and then allow the breath to flow out. One more deep breath in, and this time as you exhale, draw the stomach in towards the spine, the lower abdomen in towards the spine to push the air out as much as you can. And one more breath. Exhaling fully. And we'll chant the Spandakarikas, verse 1, three times. Yashyorme shani me shapyam jagata pralayodayau tam shakti chakra vibhava parabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yashyorme shani me shapyam jagata pralayodayau tam shakti chakra vibhava parabhavam shankaram stumaha. And one more time. Yashyorme shani me shabhyam jagata pralayodayau tam shakti chakra vibhava parabhavam shankaram stumaha. And now the mantras invoking goddesses Lakshmi, Saraswati, Kali, Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundayi Vichay Swaha. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundayi Vichay Swaha. See if you can find your awareness in the heart. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Aim Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Kleem Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Om Aim Kleem Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. One more time. Om Aim Kleem Kleem Chamundaye Viche Swaha. Inhaling, let your sitting bones and hips and thighs become heavy. Exhaling, allow the spinal column to elongate upward through the crown. Inhaling, feel your shoulder blades coming onto your back. Exhaling, allow the chest to lift and open. And allow your attention and awareness to lightly touch the breath. We're going to take a couple of minutes to perform a practice that's really at the very heart of tantric approach to study, which is to give ourselves some practice in recognizing the divinity that lives inside our own bodies. In the study of texts like the Spandakarikas, there is the potential for experiencing our own level of consciousness shift just by paying attention to the words of the text. And yet, in order to allow the text to work on us, it's very important that we take ourselves a little bit more inward than our ordinary mundane state of awareness allows. Even when we're in a good state, when our attention is outgoing, it can be very hard to grok the very subtle experience that the text is pointing to. Basically, it's because the feeling of being limited by the body and the personal history get in the way. And so very often in Tantra, the practitioner will do a protocol at the beginning of a ritual or study or meditation where we try to transcend identification with the physical body and our personal history, and for that matter, our past and future. In other words, to come into the present by engaging the body at increasingly subtle levels, by engaging the mind at progressively subtler levels. And we'll start by recognizing the body as a divine body. It's said in the tantras that all levels of this universe, subtle and gross, are contained inside the human body. Not only that is the body a temple, but the body itself, it's said, is the home of all deities, of all powers. Remember our sutra, everything arises out of the individual soul, so he is all things because of the awareness he has of them. And this sounds abstract, even hyperbolic, until we practice to make this awareness real for ourselves, both through deity meditations as well as by beginning to relate to our physical body as what's called these days an open system, rather than as a closed and limited conglomeration of physical flesh and bones, blood and fluids, rather by discovering the body's energy. So as we bring the attention to the body, see if you can begin by letting go of the picture you have of your body and even of the thought that this is a body. You know, this is one of the ways that we hold our body in limitation, is by tuning into the body through this image that we have of the body. And I won't even go into all the ways in which our body image is different than what the physical body actually looks like. The conditioning about the body goes much deeper than that. So in non-dual body awareness practice, we start by really tuning into the felt sense of the body. And I'm going to suggest that you start with your face, just feeling the sensations in and around what you might call your face. Giving up the idea that this is a head, this is a face. See if you can feel the sensations in the front of the head as pure sensation. Just the way it feels to have your attention tuning into the front of the face, the area around the eyes, the inside of the nostrils. The forehead, the top of the skull, the back of the skull. Feel this area as a collection of sensations. A kind of radiant, vibrating, pulsing, felt sense that has no thought in it, that is simply a feeling. See if you can bring that felt sense, that sense of body as sensation down through the neck and shoulders. Noticing that as in the head, the neck and shoulders have various areas of sensation, some of them feeling tingly or warm, some of them feeling kind of hard and sharp even, or dull and achy. Just feel the sensation, and though I have named them, see if you can feel them without naming. And let your sense of the sensation, feeling of sensing into your body, let it move down the arms, feeling the forearms, the underarms, the palms of the hands, the backs of the hands. Without naming the sensations, just see if you can sink more and more deeply into the experience of bodily sensation. And very slowly, very mindfully, allow attention to sink down through the torso, sensing into the torso and the lower abdomen and the back. Sensing down the legs, even though in order to guide you, I'm using words like legs and torso, let go of them, and just sense into the body as a vibrating mass of pure sensation of different textures, of different intensities. Begin to notice if the sensation, the collection of sensations that you experience, actually has an edge. Is there a line of demarcation as to where the sensation of being inside the body ends and something we label air begins. See if you can notice how the sensations of the body are actually, if you pay close attention, edgeless. You can feel into your body as sensation without labeling it as my body, without labeling one part of the sensation is inside and another part is outside. And just relaxing into this body of radiant sensation, radiant vibration. Now use your imagination to recognize that this entire sensation body is permeated by golden light. It's being irradiated by the abundant light of Goddess Lakshmi, who manifests visually as light, subtly as a kind of tender warmth that you can begin to feel oozing through the sensation. All the different sensations in the collection of sensations that is your body. Is being filled and permeated by the loving golden light of that form of the divine Spanda whom we call Lakshmi. Love as warmth, love as tenderness, love as softness. These are the qualities of the Lakshmi energy. Love as motherly protection. Love simply as a kind of radiating experience of purity and auspiciousness, which is being drawn into the body by the hovering presence of Goddess Lakshmi. Not only does she occupy your body by appearing through and as the sensations, she also embraces, holding your energy, holding this body of sensation and light. To see if you can relax into the experience of sensation as Lakshmi, as the golden radiance of love and abundance, of generosity, of gratitude. The radiance of Lakshmi. And when you're ready, you can, if you like, open your eyes. And as you open your eyes, see if you can feel that the awareness that extends into your body and beyond it and seems to flow outward is actually holding the room you're in, the objects, the sound of my voice, and also the beings who are with us through the ether. And as thoughts arise, as feelings arise, as the natural tendency to re-picture your body, to re-identify the body as my body arises and subsides, see if you can keep sensing that they are all being held in your awareness. See if you can experience the loving intimacy that arises when you consider this. Your entire field of experience is being held inside your awareness, which is Shiva's awareness, which is the great awareness, and is held so intimately, so lovingly, such that nothing, no piece of furniture, no memory, no thought, no tree, not the traffic outside, not the road if you're listening in the car, nothing at all is not held in awareness. Forget whether that you think this is true or not. Just see if you can taste the sweetness that arises when you feel intimately connected to everything, because you're allowing yourself to recognize that it is all being experienced inside your awareness. I want to read my favorite verse from the Kashmir Shaiva poet Utpala Deva, which I've read at other times in the course of this time together, but which I think is really it's the anthem of surfing reality. And it's addressed devotionally to the divine as Shiva. O Lord, having discovered you from within the universe, that is, within ourselves, we find the universe is in you. People given to ego do not understand the essence of beauty, or indeed that the essence of everything that exists is beautiful. Whether through immense joy or through anguish, whether from on a wall or in a clay jug, whether from external objects or within, reveal yourself to me. May I live seeing you in the world made of pulsating endless consciousness, along the path where all unconsciousness has been dispelled. So last week, my dear ones, we practice with two very esoteric verses. Verse 28 says, everything arises out of the individual soul. So he is all things because he perceives his identity with the awareness he has of them. That's a wow. You are that awareness. You are that awareness which never changes and yet which is able to hold everything within which all experience vibrates. I'm sitting looking out a window with some Douglas firs and a small part of a lake and the sky which is full of clouds. It's all moving. It's all scintillating. And yet, as in your personal world at this moment, holding all that movement is the awareness that we have of them. Therefore, verse 29 says, there is no state in thoughts, words, or their meanings that is not Shiva, that is not divine consciousness. It is the enjoyer alone who everywhere abides as the object of experience. One of the later verses in the Spandakarikas talks about how the senses who are described in this tradition as goddesses, that is, our sense of sight, our sense of hearing, our sense of smell and taste and feeling itself, are not happening as a result of the eyes meeting the tree or the ears meeting the sound of my voice. They're happening because these energies known as the sense goddesses are acting to produce this experience within awareness, which is another well. And it's said that these shaktis, these goddesses, offer the experiences of the senses as entertainment for Shiva, who is always present as the stillness of the knower, the one who is always experiencing everything, who's experiencing you, what you consider you. And in verse 30, which we'll work with this week, verse 30 says, constantly attentive. That means really paying attention to what it is that's behind all this arising and perceiving the entire universe as play. One who has this awareness is undoubtedly liberated in this life. Constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe as play, one who has this awareness is undoubtedly liberated in this very life. And another translation of this, this is by Daniel Odier, is always present to the reality that he perceives as the play of his own nature. The tantrika is liberated at the heart of life. And that is actually a beautiful way of describing the state of the enlightened tantrika. That is, in the midst of your life, in the midst of your karmas, in the midst of the script that you are living through and the choices that you're making, nonetheless, there is the recognition that all of this is the play of the divine. All of it, the beautiful parts, the gnarly parts, the gross parts, the subtle parts, they're all part of the play. And this, of course, is the radical awareness of the tantra. My guru's self-realization, which was a tantric self-realization, was described by him in the title of his autobiography as the play of consciousness. The play of consciousness, he calls it chit shakti, the play of the power of divine intelligence, the play of divine love intelligence. The Sanskrit word is lila, which means sport, or vilas, which means play. And in the tantric traditions, and also actually in most of the Indian devotional traditions, and tantra is, among other things, a devotional tradition. This lila is described as the play of the creative potential, the chaitanya, the chitti shakti that's at the heart of all existence and all experience. So honestly, this is the key tantric understanding. Everything that's happening in this universe of experience is a complex dance of one divine creative consciousness that has chosen to flow and act as the mind and senses of intelligent creatures like ourselves, and also of creatures that don't, on the face of it, seem to be intelligent. Because remember, that play is going on in and as everything. That supreme consciousness has chosen to appear as a world with all its complexity simply in order to experience it, this world of thought and action in which everything appears separate and different, constantly interacting with itself, and ultimately to recognize through you, through me, through each of us, what this really is, what our lives really are, to recognize that all of it is a play, a dance, appearing within one unified field, one consciousness. So, in this delicious recognition, which we forget again and again, in which the text constantly invites us in different words to remember, Shiva Shakti, divine consciousness, which is, remember, pure knowing, awareing, and which is also love, which is the still witness and the endlessly playful actress, embodies, takes on embodiment purely out of joy because he, she, that can. Shiva embodies through the incredible creative power of his own Shakti, the Spanda, which arises constantly from within his being. Because creativity, that endless urge to create, is inherent within consciousness. It's inherent in the field of our own mind, even though it's relatively limited for most of us. But the deep liberated truth here is that our awareness is actually as infinite, as filled with absolute potentiality, as the absolute form of awareness, the Shiva Shakti. We can and do manifest extraordinary realities, positive and negative, through our desires, through our thoughts, through our actions, which are simply contracted experiences of that ultimate capacity for knowing, feeling, willing, desiring, and doing. And I would say this is both the good news and bad news. One of the great, great teachings that I've been unpacking for years is in a different text, a text called the Pratyabhijna Hridayam, or the heart of the doctrine of recognition, meaning the recognition of your identity with pure consciousness. And in one of the sutras, it says that this absolute consciousness, Chitti Shakti, the power of supreme awareness, becomes an individual mind, your mind and my mind, by contracting in accordance with the objects of perception. In other words, when you are seeing this room, the room that you're in, that consciousness, which is in reality vast and limitless, has actually condensed itself to take on the shape of the room so that you experience yourself as a separate body with eyes, seeing a room and hearing my voice and perhaps trying to understand it or doing this meditation practice while you're listening. All of this is happening inside the field of contracted consciousness that is simply the result of this absolute awareness taking on the shape of whatever is being brought into the field of what we call our mind, our chitta in Sanskrit, which means individual consciousness. So my guru used to tell a story, which some of you know, about a man who was on a pilgrimage. And this is India, which is a magical land in which all kinds of extraordinary sacred things appear in unexpected places. And this man sees in front of him a very, very beautiful tree. And it's, you know, it's hot, it's summer. The tree is so inviting. So he's drawn, as who wouldn't be, to sit underneath it. What he doesn't realize is that it's a wish-fulfilling tree. It's the tree that fulfills desires. So he's sitting there, he's feeling very good, and he's thinking, oh, it's so beautiful here. Too bad I'm all alone. I wish I had a beautiful woman to share it with. And just as he thinks that, he hasn't even finished the thought, when a gorgeous young woman walks shyly into the grove, and her hips are swaying and her eyes are large, and she's looking at him with infinite love, and within moments they're telling each other their life stories. And the man is ecstatic. And he says, oh, you know, so wonderful to know you. And to make it perfect, we should find a restaurant in the neighborhood. And immediately, you know, in just the time it takes to have the thought to speak the words, a restaurant appeared, and it's serving a whole range of international specialties, Indian appetizers and snacks, mango lassi, and some Italian food, and some very, very beautifully prepared Asian fusion cooking. And the man and his girlfriend sit down, and they order from the waiter who magically appears, and when the check arrives, he wishes for a credit card, and there is a platinum visa right in his hand. And he says, okay, now we need a place to sleep. Without a pause, he finds himself inside a palatial house overlooking the rolling hills. And he wonders, where's the furniture? And immediately, a leather covered sectional appears, a king-size bed, a dining table, a jacuzzi, a 48-inch plasma TV screen, maybe it's 54 inches. And he thinks, oh, my God, this is so amazing. Everything I wish for is coming true. And then he thinks, wait a minute, my wishes are coming true? There must be a demonic spirit around here. And, of course, as soon as he has that thought, this huge demon appears, all teeth and fangs. And the man goes, oh, my God, help me. He's going to eat me. The demon eats him. And my guru would always follow this story. He would always follow. He would laugh and laugh and laugh. He hadn't even had a chance to try out the couch, he would say, and the demon ate him. He would say the wish-fulfilling tree is the mind. And, you know, through the mind we create everything. All the complexity of life, the joy, the insights, the fears, the novels, the poetry, the legal arguments, the blueprints, everything is created through the mind. And you know, the quality of creation, the pattern of creation is that a desire arises, it's clothed in thought, and then action takes place. And so thought, desire, is the seed of all action. And since at that time I was a person with a wildly creative and often self-torturing mind, I always have a hit of self-recognition whenever I heard this story, because it was very clear to me, as it probably is to you, how many of the creations of my mind, of my consciousness, tend to be limiting and even painful. And yes, they were often manifesting as painful external realities, which is, of course, one of the teachings of the New Age tradition, as well as of Kashmir Shaivism and Vedanta, that what we create inwardly will eventually manifest outwardly. And I want to say, from my own experience, that fortunately our thoughts don't have enough power, that all of our negative and even positive thoughts and wishes can manifest immediately. But the fact is that on a non-dual level, this creativity of the mind, and this is really the important piece, is an expression of Shiva's creativity. One of the ways we can recognize the divine nature of our awareness is that just as Spanda creates worlds on the outside, she creates infinite worlds on the inside. And so, in honor of Lakshmi and her power of auspiciousness, it is very important that we create auspicious attitudes through our practice. And yet, at the same time, it really is all Shiva's consciousness. So we live with that paradox, cultivating the most auspicious frame of mind we can through positive thinking and mantra, looking into our limiting beliefs and emotions, etc. Nonetheless, and even though this is a very popular teaching, as we discussed last week, and even though what we've also come to realize through Carl Jung's work and through contemporary thinkers, that a lot of what determines our experience of life is not what we're consciously thinking, but what is going on in the subconscious. Nonetheless, this remains one of the most subtle and powerful truths that the non-dual traditions have to offer us. It's in the Maitreya Upanishad. It's a powerful Buddhist saying, through the mind happiness, through the mind sorrow. The teaching here is that, as verse 30 says, constantly attentive to the recognition that your own awareness is not different than Shiva's, that your entire life, what appears outside as well as what appears inside, is appearing within your consciousness, within your awareness. Constantly attentive, looking for the opportunities to recognize awareness as the heart of everything, to recognize the spanda arising and subsiding, preceding the entire universe's play. We are undoubtedly liberated at the heart of life. And one of the other translations, the one by Jaidev Singh, says, there is no doubt about this. This is the truth, they say. Just recognize that this whole universe is the play of the self, which is your awareness, which is Shiva. I'm repeating this again and again. Not because I think you don't get it, but because these are kind of magic words. They create, or they have the potential to create, an experience in the mind. That is, a liberated person recognizing, identifying his own awareness with Shiva, recognizes that everything in this world is actually one's own play. And as we have already said, this is a spontaneous awareness. In other words, we can't make it happen. When it arises, we know it, but we can't invent it. We don't consciously create it. What we can do is practice as if this were our experience. In other words, play that most beautiful game of fake it till you make it by constantly reminding ourselves, turning our attention back on awareness and inviting awareness to reveal itself, not only as the underpinning of all of our experience, but actually as the creator of all experience. I want to say, too, that to start to realize that everything is arising within your own awareness and that everything that's happening is a play can be very sensitizing, especially if you tend to be empathic. Because one thing that happens for many people is that when we begin to be sensitive to that arising in awareness, there can be the very positive and beautiful experience that Kavita spoke about on the listserv, where everything that's arising seems to be touching you, touching your awareness. So the sounds start to tickle and the colors become saturated with richness. And a conversation with another person can feel like lovemaking because the intimacy is so profound. And that brings about the experience of love, which is really the experience of recognizing your own consciousness in another. But it also opens you to feeling others suffering inside your own awareness. And this is when I found it's extremely important, if you want to stay in a non-dual consciousness, to begin to recognize, and again, I want to emphasize this, that the experiencing awareness that holds your world is not personal. It feels radically personal because it includes the personal. That's part of how it manifests as the felt sense of personal identity, personal intimacy. But in fact, it isn't personal. The awareness that allows you to experience everything, and which is what ultimately everything is made of, is the great awareness in disguise, the great awareness in drag. And even just holding the thought that your own cognizing capacity arising from within the great knower can help you navigate both the feeling that reality is happening outside you, that somehow somebody's doing something to you, or that you have to change something, and causing you to feel acutely the feelings of others around you, or to make yourself an object, or to make yourself the only subject and everything else an object. The cure for all of this is simply to recognize that that awareness which holds it is you and also not you. That is, it's all being projected from this one source of which you're a part, but for which you are not at this stage in your evolution ultimately responsible. Partially responsible, but not ultimately responsible. And to recognize this is to open the possibility to the possibility that the impulse behind all of it really is love, that there's a telos, a purpose behind it. That consciousness is learning to recognize itself to all of us. So constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe as play. He who has this recognition that everything is identical in the divine is undoubtedly liberated in the heart of life. So right now, let's just take another moment to notice the awareness that contains all that is inside our experience. Begin by being aware that you're hearing my voice. And see if you can remove the idea that this is my voice or anybody's voice. And just let yourself hear the words and the feelings in the words arising and subsiding inside awareness. Sense the sensations in the body arising and subsiding inside awareness. Recognize thought. Arising and subsiding inside awareness. And just pull back and see if you can tune into the texture of that knowingness, which so intimately holds the experience of the senses, as well as the thoughts and feelings and energy states that arise inside what we normally call consciousness. Just feel how this fundamental knowingness, which also contains the capacity to feel, to create, is holding not only your experience, but my experience and the experience of everyone who's on the call or listening, and also the experience of all those people and beings of different kinds who are completely unaware of us. This same awareness is holding them, is holding their experience. And we have this gift, this ability, and believe me, it is really a gift, to be able to stand back, reorient our attention, and recognize awareness holding everything, and then feel into the texture of whatever is appearing inside awareness, which could be the body, as we were doing earlier in feeling into sensation, which also could be the texture of thought and imagination. Because, of course, there's a feeling state to every thought. And when we can allow ourselves to be awaring, to be awareness, to be that which knows the thoughts, we can also begin to feel how a particular thought shows up in awareness. How, for example, a thought like, I'm so confused, will completely skew the experience of your inner consciousness into a kind of a chaotic state, a despairing state. And how a thought like, I'm being showered with the golden light of Goddess Lakshmi, can bring with it a corresponding experience, a creation of lightness and auspiciousness. So, one of the most skillful ways there is to begin to recognize the Shivaness of everything, the Spandanness of everything, is to begin by becoming present to the awareness. And then as you do that, then you can start tuning in to whatever is appearing in awareness as also being completely imbued with the force of the divine. And our experience begins to be unified. So I want to just bring one more esoteric thought into this. And you can continue to be present to awareness holding all of this, or if you prefer, love holding love, because awareness is love. So the text is really saying implying at least that we bring objects into existence by our awareness of them. Everything arises in the individual soul. Everything has its source in us. And on the face of it, of course, this is ridiculous, since there are obviously lots of things in this world that are present, whether you see them or not, whether you're aware of them or not. Although, of course, it does bring up that old philosophical question, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody sees it, is there really a tree and did it really fall? I mean, clearly something does see the tree, because awareness is in everything, including in the tree and in the other trees. So the forest is not only apprehendable by human consciousness. But one of the ways to look at this is that there are two levels of creation. That is, on the cosmic level, whatever is being experienced is happening inside the great consciousness, this world which has, let's call it an objective existence, a kind of consensual reality. You know, there is an evolutionary process. There are planets, there are stars, there are black holes, there are human beings and animals and trees and rocks that are real, in at least in our waking state of consciousness, and which are engaged in a process of coming into manifestation, being sustained, and ultimately dissolving. And that manifestation, that creation is, at least in our present state of consciousness, speaking for myself, is not something we have control over, except within a fairly limited sphere. However, as individuals, we are constantly creating our personal world through what we choose to focus on, both outside and in our own mind, through the attitudes we choose, and actually even through what we physically notice in the so-called external world. And of course, this world is full of individual consciousnesses, all using bodies, minds, and senses to apparently make choice to look at reality from particular perspectives. And each of these beings and bodies and minds and senses are at different levels of awareness. So they're all, and so all these different experiences are being manifested at one time, both in the biosphere and in the noosphere, inside the subtle realms of thought and imagination. There are multiple creations happening. Just as, and this is a classic analogy, in my house, which is it's in a rural area, there are a lot of critters around, especially spiders. And if I go away for a few weeks, the spiders start building their nests, building their homes, their webs in the bedroom, in the bath, creating their own world inside the big world of my house. And this is how the universe is. It's a tapestry. It's a loom of individual creations within the great consciousness. And every action or thought is arising and subsiding such that we actually don't quite know whether a thought or an idea that shows up in the mind actually belongs to me, to you. That is it a creation of my own personal awareness, or does it just happen to be floating around and land in my mind? You know how before there was an internet, there was a viral interchange of thoughts and feelings inside families, cultures, nations, certainly in the world of creativity. Because there is only one noosphere, one subtle realm of thoughts and feelings that we all partake in, we have the experience that ideas, illusions, beliefs that are held in culture profoundly influence our own experience. You know, one of the things that I've always found really interesting in religious history is how in the 12th century, both in Europe and in India, as well as in the Middle East, there was an emergence of saints, of great beings who had realized the oneness of things, yet retained a devotional relationship with God. They were lovers as well as knowers. Rumi, Yaneshwar Maharaj in India, Meister Eckhart in Europe, and many others. Their realizations were strikingly similar, yet they obviously never met each other or even knew each other's language. So something in the subtle world affects all of us, even when we don't quite know it. So in a certain sense, or actually in the deepest sense, if there were not this innate awareness being, this nothing could manifest. And if it were not for the fact that oneself underlies both the experiencer and what is experienced, there would be no possibility at all of experiencing anything. So, constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe's play, he who has this awareness is undoubtedly liberated in this very life. There's one very interesting practice which I want to practice with you during this time, and then we'll talk about it, and then we'll go on and say a few more things. And this is an understanding about what is called in Shaivism the unity between the five cosmic acts of Shiva and our own process of perception and thought. This is really one of the greatest tantric practices for recognizing the fact that the universe is playing through us and through everything else that's going on. It actually takes us past the practice of recognizing our awareness as the background of experience to actually recognizing that our process of perception and thought is not different from, is a, as we call it, miniature form of that great consciousness itself. Because remember, the key insight of Tantra is as here, so elsewhere, or as above, so below. That means there's utter congruity, turtles all the way down, as someone says, Russian dolls nesting at each other on the vast level and on the infinitesimal level. So the fivefold act of Shiva, as it's called, the fivefold act is a description of the fact that consciousness is always doing the same five things, no matter how it looks, no matter what form it's taking on every level of experience. So these five acts are happening on a cosmic scale. The universe performs them. The individual performs them. They happen in the mind, and they happen in our experience of perceiving the world. So again, most of you know what the five acts are, but I'm going to describe them. The first act is manifestation, that is the process in which something arises, something is born. The second is sustenance, in which that which manifests is sustained. And then there's dissolution, that which manifests dissolves. And of course, these three functions go on very obviously in our life. So, for instance, the universe arises, explodes out of the Big Bang, and once having manifested, it goes through growth processes. It's sustained, and eventually the universe, even the universe itself, dies. In the same way, our bodies come into being. They grow and sustain themselves. They die and dissolve back into the earth. This happens inside our bodies through cells. Cultures are born, sustain themselves, and dissolve. Religions and ideas are born. Paradigms are born. Someone once said that how does an old paradigm get replaced? All the people who held it have to die. So the process of birth, sustenance, and dissolution at every level of experience is basic. But the part that is kind of esoteric in the process is the other two functions, which are concealment. In Sanskrit, the word is tirodhana, and revelation or grace. The Sanskrit word is anugraha. And as this process is going on, the shivaness, the spanda within everything is being concealed. It's being hidden. In other words, the forms which arise are sustained and dissolve. The experience of birth, living, and dying all happen, and we have no idea that these processes are actually taking place within one unified field of consciousness. So the fact of our ultimate connectedness to each other, the non-dual essence that we share, even the fact that it's that awareness which lets us know each other, experience each other, is completely concealed behind the forms that have been created. You know, it's like Heath Ledger's makeup in The Dark Knight, that movie, The Dark Knight, where this incredibly handsome actor is disguised in clown makeup and is utterly unrecognizable. You know, or it's like Superman disguised as Clark Kent. It's one of the fundamental tropes of the hero in disguise, which actually is a metaphor for the way in which the ultimate actor, the experiencer who appears in all experience, is totally hidden, disguised by that experience. As Meister Eckhart says, the maker is hidden in the workshop. The worker is hidden in the workshop. We can't see the fact that all of this is being done by that great consciousness, which is our consciousness. And yet, even as consciousness is concealing oneness, even as the density of the body is, for example, concealing the fact that our cells are mostly space, even as the matter in our bodies is hiding the fact that we're all actually, our bodies are all made of star carbon, nonetheless, with all this concealment, consciousness also reveals itself. The fifth act, grace, is the revelation that allows us to recognize oneness. So grace is not just the good stuff that happens to us, although I consider that a vital part of grace and part of that which makes life worth living. Grace is also that sudden aha, the feeling of wonder, the recognition that, oh my God, I can feel my way into this very subtle, awaring presence that's holding my experience. I can see that it's all arising and subsiding inside one awareness. I can see the light pouring from the ocean in one of those revelatory moments. I can realize that my heart is actually adorable, that love is inside me. These are all acts of revelation or grace. A great man once said, grace is that which returns things to their source. In other words, grace is that moment when you see, it's all part of that great one. Constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe's play, he who has this awareness is undoubtedly liberated in the heart of life. I have a friend who, in the 2008 financial crisis, was working at a big brokerage firm and was right in the beating heart of the financial meltdown. She was sitting looking at her Bloomberg terminal at the moment that it became clear what was happening, and she said that she had a moment of utter astonishment, like her mind went completely blank. Is this really happening? And then as she watched it over the days that followed, there was a moment when she suddenly realized that it really, really was a play. In other words, that it had nothing to do with anything but the natural movement of markets, which are an expression of the movement of consciousness, as people say all the time. And she said that in that realization, she was actually able to watch the process of which so many people in her firm and around the world lost their jobs. She lost her job, in which so many people lost a lot of money. She lost a lot of money. And to keep recognizing it as a play, so that even when panic arose, even when fear arose, there was something in her which was actually enjoying it all, to the point where the other people who worked in her office would come in and sit with her, and a couple of people said to her, gosh, you know, being around you feels so good. Do you mind if I just hang out with you a little while before I go back into the fray? So grace, which is the ability to see what's at the heart of everything, is always going on, just as concealment is always going on. And the tantric texts tell us that we can discover our identity with that great consciousness by watching what goes on in the mind and also in the process of perception. You know, so one of the big questions that people raise, that people wonder about as we turn inside, is, so where do thoughts come from? Where do enlightening thoughts come from? Where do nasty thoughts come from? And of course we have all the human answers, like they come from our conditioning, or they come from what we read, or they come from what we focus on. But actually, there's a meta process going on. So if you'd like to stretch for a moment, if you need to do that, I'll explain the process and then we're going to practice it. So in the mind, in the creation and dissolution of thoughts, something is always being born. That thought or image stays there for a while, and then it dissolves. And if it's an image of, you know, let's say the goddess Lakshmi, you want to hold on to it, and you're disappointed when it dissolves. If it's a thought like, oh God, I'm such a no good, horrible person, you're desperately trying to get rid of it and are very happy when it dissolves. But the point is, everything arises and dissolves. So let's practice with it. A thought is created, and for the purpose of this exercise, I'm going to ask you to create a thought. And let's make it the thought of your mother or your primary feminine caregiver. Think of your mother. See if you can hold that thought, whether it's an image or maybe you're bringing a felt sense of her into your mind. And notice that when you bring the thought of your mother into your mind, there are feelings that arise. Love, sadness, perhaps annoyance or guilt or sorrow or amusement. There are certain feelings associated with this being. And just notice how your consciousness feels as you sustain that thought. Now create another thought and let that be the thought of Barack Obama. Let the thought of Barack Obama become large in your mind. And notice what happens in the mind around that thought. And for most of us, when the image of the president arises, the thought of your mother is mostly dissolved. It mostly disappears, or it partially disappears. But the thing is, it doesn't go away. In other words, this is a very obvious fact that the thought that arose in your mind actually remains in the subconscious. It's stored, so to speak, in the subconscious. And when I remind you of it, think of your mother, it returns. You know how to do that. And even though you may not know how to banish the thought of your mother, that's not so easy. But even when that thought does dissolve, it remains concealed in the mind. It stays like a seed in the mind, a samskara, a neuronal firing. It joins with all the other thoughts, memories, impressions, stored perceptions that are stored in your brain, stored in your subtle body, and pop out when triggered. So consciousness conceals these thoughts and images as well as your past experiences. And here's the sort of interesting part of it. Those stored thoughts and images and everything that goes with them, especially the emotions, actually form a barrier, a density in consciousness that accumulates over time as thought after thought after thought, image after image after image, emotion after emotion after emotion arises, is replaced by another, and then dissolves back into the mind. All of this actually veils the pure awareness, keeps you from recognizing that all thoughts are actually made of one single substance, of one single consciousness. So let's perform our act of grace, the basic fundamental act of sadhana. Look into your own mind. Perhaps, let's say, bring back the thought of your mother. and look into what that thought or that image or that feeling complex is actually made of. The thought or the idea of your mother or of Barack Obama or of your laundry list, whatever it is that appears in the mind, is actually made of mind stuff. It's made of Shakti. It's made of Spanda. It's made of consciousness, of awareness, condensing into thoughts and images. Notice what happens to, let's say, the thought of your mother when you look into it with the recognition that it is actually an arising squib, a creative manifestation of the Shakti, the consciousness of your own awareness. What happens to it? Someone in the last class I did on the Spandakarikas was shared with us a moment that I found very powerful because it's my experience also. You know how our experience, when someone else shares it, we recognize it. She used this method one time when she was feeling hurt by the opinion that she feels her mother has about her. You know, her mother doesn't like what she's doing with her life, and it hurts. It hurts this woman, who I'll call Ellen. Then she recognized that even my experience of the opinion she has of me is an aspect of consciousness, is my own consciousness. Her opinion and the feelings I have about it are arriving and subsiding in the. In fact, my mother and everything she thinks and feels is not different from me. And the thought of oneness is recognition of oneness. However, we give ourselves by remembering oneness in one way or another. Because it's this that allows our thoughts and feelings, our painful thoughts and our exciting thoughts to return to their source. It allows consciousness to expand. It allows auspiciousness to arise. It allows grace to come into the situation. So as you sit, see if you can notice how thoughts and images and sensations, and we're talking now about what's going on inside what we call our mind or our consciousness, how they arise and subside. And now I want to ask you to take this one step further. Open your eyes if they're not open already and just notice what appears in front of your eyes. There's a room there or perhaps again, I keep thinking of people who are listening in the car. A dashboard and the road and the passing cars. The tables, the chairs. Just allow this image that's appearing in front of your open eyes. Recognize it. This is your act of manifestation. You know, the verse says that when Shakti opens her eyes, the world appears, and this is what's happening to you. The world or at least a portion of it, is manifest before your eyes. And you're holding, you're sustaining that vision by focusing on it. That's your act of maintenance. Now please turn your head, turn your whole body if you have to, and look at something behind you or beside you if you're in the car. Obviously don't do that. Watch the road, but perhaps you can find a way to watch the road without not doing this exercise. And notice that when you turn around and look at something behind you, you're actually dissolving your first experience and creating a new one. Even though some memory of the first vision may remain in your mind, essentially, you're dissolving it. And now also notice that as you look at this new object and you can turn back, make yourself comfortable. If you're in an ordinary state of consciousness, you're seeing it as being different from you, outside you. You're experiencing yourself as being behind this wall of skin and room or the car as being other than you, separate from you. This is your act of concealment. This is our primary experience of concealment. Consciousness is concealing from you the fact that there is a basic unity between you and the room. You're experiencing the world as separate from you. Now have the thought, all this is within me. My awareness holds my entire experience. And just notice what happens. Just notice what it feels like when you give yourself the grace of recognizing that everything is within your awareness. And really let yourself relax into this recognition. The room, the light, the body, the thoughts, the movement of energy. It's all within awareness, which is your awareness. To Shiva's awareness. And you can open your eyes. And this is the moment when we would love to hear what you're experiencing in this process. What was the experience of that last meditation? What's the experience of practicing this? Recognition of thoughts and perceptions as the fivefold act of Shiva manifesting, sustaining, dissolving, concealing, and giving grace. And if you'd like to say something or comment or share an experience or ask a question, you can press star 2 to raise your hand and Deb will unmute you so that we can hear you.
That's someone from Oregon.
Okay. So someone from Eugene, would you like to speak to us?
Yeah. Hi, Sally. It's Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you? It's so nice to hear your voice. And that was kind of miraculous, that meditation for me. And I just, even earlier today, had this moment of sort of just this grace moment of realizing that everything I'm in the midst of is just exactly the way I envisioned it. Like, I manifested all of it. And I was really touched by this story on the listserv. And it's really, really sad, and all the compassion that was flowing out to her in this moment of loss. And it was so ironic because having what would look like so much success to somebody looking in, and it had so many of the same qualities as she was describing. And it made me just realize that it's just not ever what it looks like.
It's never what it looks like.
Yeah, and nobody, like, actually can see. But, like, sometimes what you just did about, like, looking forward and realizing that's all you, and then you turn around and it's gone, and then it's back. It was really very powerful. But
I actually just wish you could, like, talk about how that awareness comes into time. Like, I know that experiencing time chronologically has so many of those qualities. But I get so stuck lately in that, like, you know, letting go of what was and moving into what will be, even though we don't know what that is. And it has so much, like, I don't know, if you could talk about how time is the same as that Swanda, that would be so helpful for me.
Well, yes, time is the way in which creation, dissolution, and sustenance plays out. It plays out in time. Something arises in time. It's held for a while in time, and then it dissolves through time. So time is the spanda of impermanence. And we experience that positively and negatively, obviously, because, you know, that means that great statement that was engraved on the Mughal king's I think on the back of his chair, "This too shall pass," you know, is an expression of the power of time. But what I've come to recognize, and this is not an original thought by any means, is that the way to work with time is to really focus on being in the present moment. In other words, let go of the past, let go of the future, realizing the past isn't there anymore. None of your successes or failures or the awful things that happened to you, or the great things you did, are here anymore. And nothing that's going to happen to you down the road is here now. All there is the present moment, and you in the present moment are the sum of your experience, but you're also completely innocent, and time doesn't matter. You know, if you're in the present, then action is without thought of consequences. You're not held back, at least not consciously, by anything that happened the last time you tried this. It's the way you conquer time, really, which is why so many spiritual masters say, you know, wonderful Buddhist statement, just this moment. It's the most powerful way to transcend time. So, and nothing else, you know, time is a very interesting topic, and a lot of great physicists and mathematicians speak to it, and the Yoga Vashista is fantastic on this topic. But for us as seekers, it all comes down to, can you stay moment by moment right here, right now? So thank you for this question, because all these practices only really make sense in the moment.
You know, I had this moment where, I mean, it's true, and I, like, say this to my kids out loud and try to tell myself all the time about the only time you, like, the only power you have is the moment you're in. There's nothing to be done about any other time. And
yeah.
I had this beautiful experience one time when I was doing this work with my son, and he was really suffering from some stuff in his childhood, and I was suffering from not being able to have loved him the way I wished I, the way I could have known. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, it was this incredible convergence of time where I felt like I got to love him again as that little being in that meditation, you know. And the thing that struck me so much was that you can actually heal the past, but only in the present.
Yes, you can. You can. You can actually reimagine your past. That's so beautiful, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you so much.
Just adore you, and I'm so grateful for your presence on this planet.
Well, back at you.
Converge with you. Thank you.
We're all part of each other.
We have someone from Tulsa.
Yes. Okay, it's Christine. Christine? Speak to us. Hello?
Hold on. There we go.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Got her now. Yeah.
Okay.
Christine, you're alive.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
You know, I'm just following along so closely. Hi. Thank you, Sally. I'm just following along so closely with what Wendy was saying, and it's so, it's just like highlighted for me. It's lately these practices are very ecstatic. Seeing the spanda and living in the light and feeling the love and the meditation that you just led us through with Lakshmi. I don't know that I've ever felt so much love pouring through me, in me, as me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm at this place where it's so intense. And it's like agony and ecstasy because, like Wendy said, you can heal the past. So being in these practices, all this, and people are talking about purification. It's like all this stuff is bubbling up into this presence. Me too, this love, and it's percolating up and coming up, and it's really intense. There's big, intense healing in the body and lots of pain coming up, but it's really the agony and the ecstasy together, and it's extraordinary, and I feel really privileged, and I don't know why I just had to say that, but I did.
I think you're right. We are all so privileged to have access to this teaching and what it contains, you know, and it's only because of your practice, your years of practice and longing, and that's true for all of us here, that experience of the transformative love can actually bring up and hold the pain of the past. You know, it really is true that, as Neil Young says, only love can break your heart, which is the agony inside the ecstasy. But really, love is the healer. So no matter what awful things you have experienced or even committed, that love, which is the heart of reality, is going to literally dissolve that stuff. And it's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just in tears. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
I don't think we have anybody else, Sally.
Okay. So, did you say no one else?
Yes, no one else.
Hi, Deb. Okay. So, Deb, do you want to mute yourself so that my voice doesn't carry over the. Over your phone system? Okay, great. So I just want to say, come back again to our verse, constantly attentive and perceiving the entire universe as play. One who has this awareness that everything is arising and subsiding in consciousness is liberated in this very life. And that means that in the moment that you have this recognition, you forgive yourself for your mistakes, or rather, consciousness forgives that one that we call me for her mistakes, for his mistakes. Gratitude arises. Ecstasy arises, that poignant sadness that feels the pain of the world and how that pain is also held in love, all this arises. And also this enormous laughter bubbles up, because the fact is that as you start to perceive the universe's play, you do start to see that with all the tsuris and all the suffering and all the schmutz that arises and the cruelty and the wars and, you know, the all the different levels of hurt and unfulfillment, nonetheless, it is all dancing inside consciousness. And so I always quote my first teacher of Kashmir Shaivism, who I want to give a shout out to. He was his name was Swami Tejo Mayananda. He was a traditional Indian sannyasin, and he used to talk about the Leela of God, the fact that everything that arises in this universe, it's all a Leela, it's all a play. And he would say, it is play for him, it is suffering for us. And of course, that's also true. And yet, even the suffering is part of the extraordinary transformative experience that consciousness, Shakti, Spanda, Shiva, Lakshmi is offering herself in the form of us, dragging us through experience after experience, desire after desire, manifestation, dissolution, concealment, all in order so that we can have these moments, more and more of them, where we go, ah, it's all being held in consciousness. It's all being carried. It's all being held. So let's take a breath, a deep breath in and an exhalation. And I want to just call forth the great paradox of this realization, which is the confusion that sometimes arises when we don't really know how to understand the fact that everything is being done, and yet we're being called on to engage, to play a role, to act creatively. In other words, to understand the connection between dharma, our let's call it obligation, to contribute to creating a world that we want to live in. In other words, not just to observe it or to consume it, but to actually act creatively and for love, and then to begin to see what the role that you are created to play really is, which can be complex. Some of us have a number of roles. And to learn how to dance in this dual recognition that you are the actor, and yet the one who is acting is not you at all, but is the Spanda Shakti. And when this recognition that it's all being held in consciousness, and that you as a body mind are thinking and acting and speaking and interacting, and yet it's all happening inside awareness, your awareness, God's awareness, if you don't mind my using the God word, you start to feel these moments where there's not anxiety or inflation or negativity. Action is happening through you in grace. And this practice of really starting to recognize the fivefold act happening through you if you practice it, and if you practice recognizing that all this is happening inside awareness and really starting to tune into that aware presence freshly. You know, there's a way we can go, okay, I understand that it's all happening inside awareness. I get that. And I have my way of tuning into it, which for me is kind of bringing my attention behind my body and just feeling like a big helium balloon of awareness is opening up and everything is being contained in it. That's a strategy for being aware of awareness, which is very helpful. But it's not actually the deep recognition of the aha of feeling the pregnant, pulsing recognition of that awareness which is holding everything, and the way in which all the arisings, like everything that's happening inside the body as sensation, everything that's happening inside the mind as thoughts, the cells firing, all of it, are actually aspects of Spanda Shakti dancing inside this overall awareness that is Shiva. So consciousness creates through the mind and senses by giving us, by manifesting experiences of inner and outer reality in each successive moment, sustaining it for a while, dissolving this moment, concealing the fact that all of it is a manifestation of subtle, invisible particles of Spanda Shakti, concealing the fact that it's all being manifested from this one source. And this vision, which is opening for so many of you, ultimately results in a complete shift of the way you perceive things. You may not notice it for some time to come. For some of you, it can happen very dramatically in this moment. But you start to have this experience of the extraordinary intimacy of consciousness, the extraordinary intimacy of the tantric awareness. And as we start to tune into our own activities, our own process of perception, our own mind, with the intention to keep recognizing that everything we say and think and do, everything that manifests itself, and everything that dissolves itself, it's all a manifestation of this one fivefold functioning that runs throughout the universe and which is fundamentally the activity of the consciousness bliss. So we're going to close our eyes now and sit for a few minutes. And you can begin by tuning into the experience of sensation inside the body. Noticing where the mind goes inside the body, where the attention goes. But there is this natural tendency to hold the awareness, this is my body, this is my head, this is my shoulder. See if you can allow attention to flow into the different parts of the body, just naturally. Letting go of the attempt to identify these body parts, or the even the assumption that this is something called a body. Feel into the sensations. And for the sake of focus, we'll begin by feeling into the sensations in the feet. The sensation on the underside of each foot. On the top. In the spaces between the toes. Really letting attention settle into the felt experience of this thing called foot. Feeling how, when you tune into the sensations there, some of which may be intense, others may feel a little numb, that there actually is a pulsing, a vibration. And then as you really tune into this pulsing, it reveals itself as innately pleasurable. The inner vibratory reality of the sensation of embodiment. If you really, really enter it, may vary in intensity. Some parts of it may feel quite intense. But at the heart of it is the fundamental pleasure that comes with sensation. And begin to notice how these sensations, perhaps the sense of the sensation in the foot now begins to expand upward through the ankle into the felt sense of the calves. Feeling the warmth and tingling. The vibrating quality of sensation. And allowing your capacity to feel into the actual felt sense of what we normally call legs is rising up through the thighs into the hips. And gradually you allow attention to feel into the sensations that arise. Noticing how sensations radiate. How sensation really does not have a boundary or a border. And that there is this deepening experience of the felt sense of sensation meeting the space around it. And the awareness that holds it. And keeping letting go of concepts such as body and sensation and awareness. Let yourself feel into the experience of being yourself. Being embodied sensation. Held in an awareness that is both knowing and free of concepts. Let yourself be in the felt experience of that presence which lives as you, embodied as the felt sense within what we normally call our physical self. Held within that expansive consciousness which has no location, no particularity, which is your non-local self, your own pure being, sparkling with Spanda Shakti, expanding into the stillness of Shiva. Have a beautiful evening and a beautiful week. So much love to each of you. Namaste.